It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. One of the most active and effective combat units in the Pacific Theater during World War II had origins right here in Wisconsin. But the story of the unit and the Wisconsinites who fought in it is often overshadowed in historical memory.
The 32nd Red Arrow Infantry Division was the first U.S. Army division to take the offensive against the Japanese military and the first to defeat them in battle. In total, they racked up 654 days of fighting, more than any other U.S. Army division during World War II.
The division was formed around National Guard units from Wisconsin and Michigan. If you keep an eye out, you can see traces of the Red Arrow Division all over Wisconsin, from memorials to park names and red arrows that appear on signs for Wisconsin Highway 32.
A new book by an author with Wisconsin roots tells the story of the Red Arrow Division from the perspective of the soldiers themselves.
Mark D. Van Els is a professor of history at Queensborough Community College of the City University of New York. He grew up in Manitowoc. He's the author of several books. His newest out this week is called Red Arrow Across the Pacific, the 32nd Infantry Division During World War II. Mark, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you.
What made you want to tackle this story of the Red Arrow Division, the 32nd Infantry Division, and their experiences during World War II?
Yeah, there are a number of reasons. I've always been interested in the lives of ordinary soldiers during the Second World War. I grew up in Wisconsin, and the 32nd Division was made up of National Guard soldiers from Wisconsin and Michigan. So they're sort of a local connection, a local interest. And as I started to study history professionally, I noticed that not much had been written about the Red Arrow Division. It seemed to be everywhere in the Pacific. It was the first U.S. Army division to go into battle against the Japanese. It ended the war on occupation duty in Japan, and it finally wasn't demobilized until 1946. And yet there really wasn't that much written about the division. It seemed like there was a missing story there. And so I wanted to continue my exploration of the ordinary GI, explore my interest in Wisconsin history in particular, and perhaps add the Red Arrow Division to the larger story of America's World War II in the Pacific.
And something I really appreciated about the book is, you know, sometimes when you read a history of a division, we start in theater. They're at war already. You really bring it back to the origins. These are regular people, mostly at the outset from Michigan and Wisconsin, thrust into a very unordinary situation. Why is it so important for us to remember that reality of the troops who were serving?
Well, I think we do need to remember that they come from our communities, that they're members of our families, and some members of our families and communities have been through some very difficult times, and they're the ones who defend us in times of trouble. In World War II, we were attacked. The war, most people supported the conflict. So they're members of our families and members of our community who are asked to do extraordinary things to defend the country.
I want to talk a little bit about the origins of the unit. Now, first of all, this is a division formed out of National Guard units in the Midwest,
yes.
Not a regular army unit, which causes conflict and contention as the story goes on. Tell us a little bit about the Red Arrow, how it got its name and how it is formed.
Well, the Red Arrow Division was formed during the First World War. The United States Army went through a major reorganization in preparation to fight that conflict. They developed permanent numbered divisions for the first time, and Wisconsin and Michigan soldiers were organized into the 32nd Division. It trained at Camp MacArthur in Texas and then shipped off to France, participated in some of the most important battles in the First World War, gained a reputation as one of the United States' most effective combat divisions during the war, including the Meuse-Argonne offensive that finally brought that conflict to an end, and then served on occupation duty in Germany for a period after the First World War. The division then came home between the wars, took part in the standard sorts of duties that the National Guard does. When tornadoes and fires break out, for example, the National Guard is called to duty. There were labor disturbances in the 1930s that the National Guard was called up for occasionally. And the National Guard conducted its usual training, although as World War II started to brew, it became pretty clear that the training that the soldiers were receiving was not really preparing them for the massive conflict that was coming.
And the name Red Arrow came from their success in World War I, right? That was the symbol of their ability to break through enemy lines.
It did, yes. They punctured every German line during the First World War, and that's where the Red Arrow symbol came from. You see that red arrow pointing upward. You see the horizontal bar across the middle of it. That was meant to symbolize that they crossed over every German line.
You share so many stories of so many people. I'm wondering if I can bring up one name, Clarence Youngworth of Oshkosh. You refer to his diary, a well-known World War II diary of his experiences, a legend in Oshkosh. He passed away just 6 years ago. Sadly, I never got a chance to interview him myself. Can you tell us a little bit about Clarence and how much of this story he was able to share?
He was one of the more interesting stories that I read, I think, particularly because he seemed like a very ordinary person. He was a kid in the Great Depression. As he describes, he joined the National Guard to make a little money, as many young men did in the 1930s. He became a company clerk for Company H of the 127th Infantry Regiment. His only qualification for that seemed to be that he took a class in typing in high school. That seemed to make him qualified to be the company clerk. And then, like everyone else in the division, was thrown into this titanic conflict. They went to training in Louisiana. They went to Australia, their first foreign country, and then thrown into battle in New Guinea in 1942.
We're talking about World War II history, the history of the Red Arrow Division, largely from Wisconsin originally. Mark D. Van Els is with us. His new book is called Red Arrow Across the Pacific, the 32nd Infantry Division During World War II. Mark, that first deployment in Papua New Guinea, some of the most brutal terrain in the world, going up against experienced Japanese veteran forces at that point in the war. And I was just shocked to read how the training for jungle combat hadn't been there. The uniforms, the boots, the equipment wasn't there. What kind of position was Red Arrow put in when they were deployed to this very, very difficult combat zone?
I think it's fair to say an impossible position. As you noted, they did not have the training. They did not yet have the equipment. I think it's also fair to say that those at the top of the chain of command also did not understand what they were getting into. Very few Americans had ever been to New Guinea. They didn't really understand the jungle environment. And American troops, the Red Arrow, perhaps more so than most, went into battle very, very confident. They believed a lot in their reputation of the First World War, that they had pierced every line. They believed themselves to be ready to fight the war. They also had some very faulty intelligence and didn't quite understand just how many Japanese troops that they were facing. And so they went in perhaps overconfident in this very difficult environment against veteran soldiers, as you mentioned. They ultimately did prevail. Mm-hmm. But those first few days on the battlefield, these soldiers had to learn some really tough lessons about what fighting is actually like, what combat is actually like. It wasn't like the movies. It wasn't like a training exercise. This was for real, and a slip-up meant death or injury. And there were some very tough lessons that the division members had to learn to ultimately prevail in that battle and all the others that followed.
Mark, before we follow them onto that first battlefield, one of the training pamphlets they got warned that they were facing two enemies, the Japanese army and nature. And nature might be the more deadly. Incredible marches through mountains and being bivouacked in jungle territory, swamp territory. How much was just disease and nature a formidable enemy for them?
Malaria in particular was a massive problem with the 32nd Division. And being the first U.S. Army infantry division to go in, they suffered perhaps more from malaria than any other division in the entire U.S. Army. The preventive measures hadn't been developed yet. The drugs to treat the malaria were inadequate. As you noted, they're camped outside in these jungles, going through the mountains, constantly being bitten by mosquitoes. Most members of the division ended up suffering from malaria by the time this conflict, by the time this battle was over, which meant high fevers, chills, some died as a result of it. And here again, the U.S. Army was really unprepared for what it would take to win the war in the Pacific.
And in that state, they go into a battle against this prepared Japanese position, one of the many spots on islands seen as key to turning the tide in the Pacific. They are having to advance through water, through bogs, through jungle, Japanese bunkers with interlocking fields of fire, without so much of the equipment we think of when we think of World War II combat, tanks, lots of artillery, air support. They didn't have it in those at the beginning of this battle. Can you talk about what they faced trying to assault this heavily fortified position with just guns and grenades?
Well, I think you described it pretty well right there. There were no tanks until late in the battle. It was very difficult. New Guinea is a place with the very dense jungles, no real road network, no port system. So just a matter of transporting heavy equipment like that was a very difficult thing to do. They did not have much artillery support. Here in this case, leaders at the top of the chain of command believed that they could use airplanes to provide the artillery support, and that turned out not to be adequate enough. The Japanese, meanwhile, had built these very well camouflaged fortifications, entrenchment systems, in some cases reinforced by cement and steel doors and these sorts of things. Going through these swamps, there were only certain pathways you could take, and the Japanese concentrated their defenses there. And with the weapons that they had, the mortars, the grenades, the rifles, they were not able to punch through most of these defenses. Not until the tanks came in were they really able to make substantial headway at Buna.
I want to go back to Clarence Youngworth of Oshkosh, because you give the last word in the book to him, and I'm going to read his quote that you end with and see if I can hold it together here. "We were just ordinary citizens from all walks of life that were given a job to do, and we did it to the best of our ability. Sometimes we liked the job, sometimes we hated it. We grew up in combat. We didn't consider ourselves heroes. What we did for the love of our families and our country." And reading the book, I try to think about what kept them going? What kept them motivated? If I put myself there at any age, I don't know if I would have made it, certainly. As you've lived and experienced and read these guys' words, what do you make of what kept them going?
I think there are a number of things. Studies of soldiers in war oftentimes suggest that soldiers fight for each other more than anything else. If you let your comrades down in battle, others might be killed. And that's a great motivating factor for you to keep fighting and do extraordinary heroic things. Just those bonds that occur between soldiers. To succeed in combat takes teamwork. So those bonds are very, very powerful. I don't think we can dismiss the idea of patriotism and love of country either. Remember, the United States entered World War II with the attack on Pearl Harbor. Those feelings were very, very high.
Mark, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for sharing this important chapter in Wisconsin history.
Thank you for having me.
Mark D. Van Els is a professor of history at Queensborough Community College at the City University of New York. We talked to him about his new book. It's called Red Arrow Across the Pacific, the 32nd Infantry Division during World War II. It tells the story of one of the most prominent combat units in the Pacific Theater during World War II, with origins here in Wisconsin and Michigan.